there's a lot of satisfaction in knowing that you're providing a good offer and that, you know, no one else is going to get in there either unless they way overpay, right? So it's, I don't know, it's the mental gymnastics of it is super fun.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Passive Income MBA. Today, I'm so excited to have our guests, Mike and Bernie, on the show today. They have a ton of experience in real estate and excited to have them on. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thanks for having us.
So just a little bit of background on both of them. Bernie has an extensive background on running high-performing teams at scale and has successfully managed multi-million dollar operations worldwide. And Mike is an MBA, a senior executive, retired Air Force officer, and combat leader. He has over 20 years of experience in investing, real estate, and business. He is a general partner, along with Bernie, on a 16-unit complex in Tullahoma, Tennessee, and has significant experience in single-family homes and is a partner in a group that owns a 60-unit complex in Atlanta, Georgia. So, guys, it's so great to have you here. I'd love if you would each take just a couple minutes and take us back in time and tell us, you know, how you got into real estate and how that led you to where you are today.
Go ahead, Mike.
Okay. Yeah. So I'd been investing for years. I worked for one of the bulge bracket banks for a while, and real estate was always something that you owned in addition to other things you did. And I'd started other successful businesses on the side. I had my regular W-2 job, and I'm very satisfied in that job and that role. And you know, real estate was just something that you had on the side. And I never thought of it as something that I wanted to do full time. And then Bernie and I worked together at our W-2 jobs. And we have a great relationship at work. We work really well together. And he came to me one day and said, "Hey, Mike, I'm interested in this new thing with real estate, and I want to own an apartment complex." And I was like, "Well, tell me a little bit more." And so he started talking to me about all the benefits of the multifamily market, all of the tax benefits, all of the diversification benefits. And, you know, I initially thought, well, you know, I don't want to manage tenants per se. And that was part of the reason that I didn't own a whole bunch of single family homes, is I don't want to deal with tenants. But after Bernie explained a lot of the way the multifamily market works, I decided, wow, this sounds really good. And then I started to look more into it and read quite a bit more. Bernie gave me some books. He was involved in a group and he said, you know, take a look at some of these resources. And I started listening to podcasts and I listened to multiple different people across the spectrum and continued my reading and diving in and decided, you know, this is a great asset class. It's certainly not what I thought it was. And it's an amazing opportunity for me and my family to make a change and to get to a point where we're, you know, we have more of our own life and time and all those other things that people want, but also to build a real nest egg that doesn't rely on the public markets or other asset classes that are harder to invest in for people who aren't uber wealthy. And so that's what got me interested and involved. And Bernie and I came together and we both decided to sell our houses. Kind of sounds crazy, but we sold our houses and we took the money from the sale of our houses in a really high growing area. And we started in on investing and we purchased as limited partners into the first complex in the Atlanta area. And we knew, you know, when we started out that we wanted to get to the point where we were going to be the general partners and we could develop our own portfolio and we could grow that portfolio. And that's how I became involved and how I'm involved today.
Okay, awesome. Mike, thanks so much for that intro. And so are you still working at your W-2?
We are. Yeah, both Bernie and I are.
Okay. Awesome. All right, Bernie, how about you take us back in time?
Yeah, my journey is like a lot of people. I think I started out with that little itch to get into real estate, looking at diversification and how to build some wealth. And so we took a HELOC out in our house that we had and bought two houses in Indianapolis, Indiana, and thought we were doing really great. And then we realized really quickly that we ran out of money really fast, and we didn't have any more money to buy. And with single family homes, it was binary, right? It's either full or it's totally empty. And it wasn't a great business to scale. And so we started looking into multifamily after that. And the benefits of multifamily from a lot of different factors, right? You know, the tax benefits, the cost segregation, all the stuff you can do with multifamily. But most importantly, if you do this right, you can actually use other people's money to scale as well. And so, you know, so I started to do a lot of learning, as Mike talked about. I started getting mentored, joined a couple of groups, read a lot of books, lots of podcasts, started researching markets, calling brokers, and making a fool out of myself in a lot of ways. But just learning kind of how to do it. And then I realized pretty quickly that I needed a partner to help out with. And, you know, Mike's a guy I've known and trust now for over 7 years. And just made sense when I talked to him, like, you know, we both had the same kind of, you know, mindset of how to grind through things. And, you know, we talked through it and, you know, we started our journey together. And, you know, a couple of years after we started this, we closed our first deal finally in February of this year.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for that background. I would love to know, you've been at this for a couple years now in terms of looking for apartments and getting into the multifamily space. What are some of the things that kind of took a while for you to, in order to be able to develop into the place where you're able to get your first building?
Well, I think, you know, having the investors, and that was one thing, you kind of have to, you know, prime the pipeline to make sure you have the money to close on deals, right? That's where Mike has been really strong for us. I think for us, it was just deal flow. You know, when you're like calling up brokers, is how do you have the reputation or the, you know, the street cred for them to even give you deals, right? And I think that was the tough part for us. And so we're really working through a lot of public deals, which aren't the greatest in a lot of ways. But I think, you know, that was the kind of the initiation fee that we had to do to get in. And I think by doing that over and over again, we kind of got a sense of what a good deal was and what wasn't a good deal, and allowed us to kind of filter things a little more quickly. So that when a broker did come to us with something, whether it was good or bad, we could quickly tell him or her, like, hey, we appreciate that, but, you know, based upon these numbers, here's why we can't do the purchase price, or here's why we could, but, you know, can we do other things? That helped us kind of follow through and get a couple of deals that were, I think, you know, at least feasible for us to close on the first time.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we did was we started looking at our backyard first. And I think that's natural, right? You know, you want to look somewhere where you can actually go out and touch and feel and, you know, find out what the market's about and where there's value. We happen to live in a really overvalued area and there's been a lot of money coming in. So, you know, there were offerings on buildings that were, you know, 3 caps, and even buildings that were really old and dilapidated, there was no value to be created. And so, you know, we spun our wheels there and then we started to
expand. And just for the listeners, Mike, that's in Boise, Idaho, right?
Correct. That's in Boise, Idaho. And, you know, there's been a ton of investment here. It's been on the list for the last 5 years of one of the hottest markets in the country. That just means there's no value here, right? I mean, that doesn't mean that there's not value. It's just that when you are entering the market without any relationships and no one who's going to give you an off-market deal, there's no value to be created. Everybody's already been through the list. People have already looked at properties that have signs in front of them, and you're not going to get anywhere with that. And so we started looking further afield and exploring areas that we knew were not as hot or as overvalued. And slowly we expanded and we felt comfortable enough in the value in the properties that we found in Tennessee that, you know, that seemed to be an area where we could actually put together a good team, put some money into the market and actually have a good return. And that's what we were striving for.
Okay. So when you did decide to look outside of Boise, what process did you use to sort of determine which markets to hone in on?
You look through the list of like migration patterns, where people move into, and you start looking at the deals, right? And looking at the things like income growth, rent growth, population growth, all those things that we're looking at. And for us, Tennessee it's one of the, you know, top rated states. I think U-Haul rated it number one last year in terms of people migrating there. And so we like the Southeast, that Sun Belt. And we thought that with Tennessee, there were some nice, you know, secondary and tertiary markets in there that still had a lot of value to us. That wouldn't require us to go in and buy a 1965 product that needed, you know, $15,000 a door just to get it up to market rents. And we could find something better. And for our investors too, with our first deal, we didn't want to go out and shoot for the moon. We wanted something pretty safe that we could, you know, go in there, manage it well, give good returns, and use that to build credibility long-term as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So Tullahoma, that was the market that you ended up looking at. And is that a secondary or tertiary market in Tennessee?
It's a tertiary market right now. Yeah. It's about an hour south of Nashville.
Okay. So I know you went through a lot to get this deal across the finish line. I'd love to just hear some of those stories, Rose.
Yeah, well, we had a deal in Clarksville, Tennessee, which is a pretty hot growing market for us. We had that under contract in February of 2020. And Mike and I were excited. We had investors all lined up. We had the money ready to go. We were going through the inspection process. I flew down, spent 3 or 4 days down there meeting the team and then going through that. And then in early March, something called COVID happened. And all of our investors, most were based in California, came back and said like, hey, everything around us is shutting down. We don't want to put our money in this deal because we have no idea what's going to happen here in the next 3 to 4 months. And so Mike and I went back to the seller and we're like, hey, can we potentially prolong the closing period and talk about price concessions, things like that? And he had no interest in any of it. And so we had to walk away from that deal, actually, right? And we had thousands and thousands of dollars already into it, inspections and travel costs and all the kind of stuff that we did, legal fees. And that was a great lesson for us, though, in terms of, we thought we had a good deal. The circumstances changed. We didn't have a great way to talk to our investors up there. And we knew that maybe for our next deal then, our takeaway was like, maybe we need something a little bit safer, right? Where investors don't get freaked out because it's a high-class market. It's really good property, really good asset. And that might be a better for us than trying to go out and find these older deals that required a little bit of rehabilitation and rehab before we get it, up to a market rate, if that makes sense.
Okay. So this first deal that in the beginning of COVID, that was more of a deeper value add or more of a value add, would you say?
It was a good deal, but it was older property. It had the roof was not the greatest. The ACs were, at the end of life, water heaters were end of life. And that was something we knew we had to address as well as some updates. And we were fine and willing to do that, but that was it was a pretty, $4,000 to $5,000 a unit just to get it back up to market rates. When COVID happened, though, investors are like, are you going to achieve those rates even after dumping in the money? We're like, we don't know because nobody knew at the time.
Okay. So basically you had to walk away from that and let those sunk costs kind of stay sunk.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. We call it tuition. It was our tuition payment for our lesson. Right.
Right.
That's right. And ultimately the property we found is a 2018 build. So it was a little over a year old when we got into it. It was fully leased. It had really nice finishes. It was a beautiful property. And so, from the perspective of talking to investors about it, this is not an opportunity to hit a home run. This was clipping coupons on a really solid property that had a lot of demand. And it was a good story to tell people about how we were going to add value to the property based on migration patterns and, work patterns in the area. And so it was something safe that we could talk about to our investors and give them a better return than they could get in the bank, especially in today's values, right? Nobody's getting any return. And so, it's a safe way in a place that has significant demand based on all of the migration patterns. And so people are happy with that. And, the long-term potential is that people are going to make a decent buck. They're not going to risk a lot. And every day we're learning something new, and that's great.
Awesome. And so you were able to close on this deal in 2020, is that right?
We closed on in February of 2021, so a couple months ago.
Okay, awesome. I think you mentioned earlier before we got on the call that it required a fair bit of persistence to get this deal across the finish line. Would you speak to some of those stories?
Sure. So we probably did what you might consider the hardest of all complete problems for the first deal. We had a syndicated deal with a group of investors. We had a Fannie Mae loan that we weren't really qualified for per se. We were qualified for financially, but the government mortgages require so much additional background information and experience and all those other things because they're non-recourse. And so we had to find a partner. We had to do this dance where we had a partner that we brought in so that we could meet the requirements on paper for experience. We had to bring in our investors and we had to line up the property to close. And we kept trying to close before the end of 2020. Because we wanted to take advantage of potentially bringing forward some of the accelerated depreciation in 2020. Well, it kept getting pushed out and we kept trying to figure out why. And, you start to learn who's doing things and who's not. And so you have a lender, you have a loan broker, you have people from the mortgage company and from the title companies, and everybody's working against each other and nobody's willing to help anybody. And so ultimately, Bernie and I decided, you know, hey, if we want this deal to close, what we really need to do here is we need to shepherd it. And we need to be persistent with people and make sure that we get the answers that we need when we need them. We need to make sure that the people that we're asking questions of are providing information, all of our due diligence information and all the information we needed for our attorneys. Because if we didn't provide that information, the deal wouldn't have closed. And then we had to talk to our investors and say, well, we're still going to close. Don't worry about it. And we had to assuage, you know, their fear that we were, you know, stringing them along. And then we had to make sure wires got in on time. And, you know, there's a million things going on. I can remember the last 3 days before we closed, you know, being up until 1 o'clock in the morning, dealing with attorneys in Minneapolis about a deal in Tennessee, in Warren, Idaho. And we're trying to make sure that every piece of paper is signed. And, oh, this document isn't signed correctly. Can you get this person to sign it? And, you know, nobody's going to do that for you. And if we didn't jump in and we weren't persistent about making sure every T was crossed, every I was dotted, every piece of information was there, it wouldn't have got done. I mean, it just wouldn't have. And so, you know, I think that's the most important thing about it is don't let other people just handle the deal, whether it's an attorney, whether it's a title company. They're going to do their job, but ultimately they're there from 8 to 5 or whatever it is. I mean, this is our deal. This is our long-term growth pattern is to do deals like this and continue to do them. So if we don't understand the process and we can't pull the people in to get it done, it's not going to get done.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Well, it's an amazing feat, especially, you know, that first time putting all the pieces together at the last minute and can be, I mean, I think every closing is a bit stressful, but first time is the worst, and kudos to you for getting it done. Yeah, I would love to hear about how you two decided you wanted to actually work together, because it's a big deal deciding on who your business partner is going to be.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-cap.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Well, we had the advantage of working together our W-2 jobs for about 5 years, I think, before. You know, we both work on the same team. We've done a lot of stuff together. Right? We've flown around the country and around the world sometimes doing stuff, you know, to support our company and our teams. And so I knew what type of guy Mike was. I knew that he was honest, straightforward, and he was a problem solver. You know, and you spend time with him and his family outside of work, that kind of stuff. I kind of grew to know that. And then, you know, from a personal perspective too, is when you're looking for a partner, you want to have a partner that complements some of your skill sets or deficiencies. And I'm not a great networker, nor am I a great fundraiser right now. And, you know, Mike has done that in his past life. He's much better networked than I am. And so it just made sense in terms of like, you know, hey, I can bring some of this underwriting, you know, deal flow type of thing already. You bring some other skills and we, you know, combine it, then we can make a really strong team. That's kind of how it started for us a few years ago.
I think it's also important that you know, like, what the long-term goal is, right? And our goals are aligned. We're very similar in that. Like, neither one of us wants to become Grant Cardone. You know, I think it'd be nice to have a private jet, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to take care of ourselves, have a good life, have more, you know, ultimately to be in a place where we can make more decisions about what we do, no matter which direction we go in, but also take care of our families in the long run. And I think that's important to both of us. And that's readily apparent to anyone who meets either Bernie or I, that we care strongly about our families and the people that we know and that we associate with. And so it's super important.
Awesome. I want to touch on something that you mentioned earlier on, which is that you both sold your houses in order to start the syndication business. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah, I can tell you. So Bernie decided he wanted to do the apartment thing, and we had talked about it, and I was interested in it, starting to get interested. He goes, you know what, Mike, I'm selling my house. He said, I'm going to move it to a rental. I'm going to sell my house. I've had a lot of appreciation, and I'm going to do this year. And I said, you know, that sounds pretty good. And our situations are a little different. My family lives in a different town, and I commute back and forth to where Bernie lives. on a weekly basis to go to work. And so we had another place that we lived, but our primary residence, when Bernie said that, I said, well, you know, I'm not going to hold on to that. I'm going to sell it too and take the gains that I've made in that place and we'll put it into this project and we'll use that to lever it up into, you know, turn something small into something big. And so it was kind of just this thing that happened and momentum caught on and there we go, you know?
Yeah.
One of those things you look back and go on is either the best decision you made or the worst decision you made, right? And I think for us, it worked out okay for us. Our wives don't hate us, which is always a benefit, right? We've made the right choice, it looks like.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, sometimes it takes those sort of big sacrifices to actually, you know, make progress. But when you can see that why, when you're connected to that why and the vision of where you're headed, that bigger picture, I feel like it can, it's, that's kind of what you need in order to make those like sort of tougher decisions in the moment.
It was also for us, it was the credibility with our investors too, because when the investors said like, great deal, what are you guys doing? And we're like, hey, we just sold our houses and we're putting in more than you are, right? That was a big one to let them know like, okay, that makes sense now. Because a lot of guys, we gals that we approached were people we'd known for a long, long time, right? So it's not like we're just, you know, some guy off the street saying, hey, give us $50,000. These are people that we've known for 20, 30 years and we're taking them. So it was more than just, you know, an investor. It was like, hey, we're trying to help you out. And here's the credibility. It's like, we found a good deal and we're putting most of our money at it as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think that co-invest is so important. Do you happen to know off the top of your head what co-invest was as a percentage of the equity?
So that's a good point.
Oh, about 21, 22% of the total equity.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty significant co-invest. I mean, I think oftentimes, you know, a 10% co-invest might be considered standard. Okay. So did you have a broker that helped you find this deal?
Well, it was a public deal, right? And so it almost sounded too good to be true when we found it. We're like, wow, what's this 2018 building doing for this decent price? But it was, the tertiary market. And so we had a broker that we had been in contact with on another property up in Northern Tennessee. And we asked him to contact the seller and start to talk through it. And that kind of helped us out. It was key for us to have that broker. Bob did a great job for us in terms of kind of shepherding our interests and our needs through that whole time. Because it was, you know, it was a 4-month process from contract being signed to, you know, the closing date.
Yeah, for sure. So you were basically, though, searching on your own. On which resources were you looking at?
Oh, gosh, everything. Crexy, you know, City Feet, all the good ones out there. You know, just typing in the city and state and saying apartment buildings for sale and you find some random thing. So, you know, this one was a kind of a random one I found online. It was by the seller's broker. He had it on their site. I knew him indirectly through one of the groups I was with. So I knew of him. So that's kind of how I got to his site and it worked out, right? And so we called up and it was nice. The good thing for us in this one is we had proof of concept too, which is that we knew it was undervalued, under rented in terms of the owner. It was a self-owned or self-managed deal. He was a builder that built it, had his wife manage it. And then COVID happened and they freaked out too. And they signed a bunch of long-term leases at way under market value. And so when they wanted to sell, they brought a property manager in and he started to raise rents, you know, a couple of months before we signed the purchase agreement. So that for us was a nice way to say, hey, we have proof of concept already. This can be done. It just needs some time to bake and to settle. And so that helped us in terms of also our credibility with our investors to say like, hey, we know that rents are below like market by about $150, $200, right? And we can prove it out already based upon current activity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's awesome. Okay. Well, you know, you mentioned before that the process of finding deals can be a grind, but that taking pleasure in the small wins is important. So what are some of those small wins that you've experienced?
Well, it's kind of exciting, right? You get in there and you go, oh my God, that's so much potential. And, you know, what could you do? How could you make it work? And you start, you know, trying to figure out all the details and what you could pay for it. And well, what can we do? Can we structure it this way? Can we, you know, and it's kind of fun. It's a mental model, right? It's a little bit of a Rubik's Cube. And so the mental challenge is fun to figure out if you could find a way to make it work. You know, we recently had somebody come to us and say, hey, here's an off-market deal. And, you know, we went through about 4 or 5 different iterations to see if we could make it work and then make an offer to the owner and be confident that we were giving them a good offer based on what they had and telling them that they were overpriced. And yeah, we'd buy it for you for X, or this is a way we could buy it from you. But, you know, there's a lot of satisfaction in knowing that you're providing a good offer and that, you know, no one else is going to get in there either unless they way overpay, right? So it's don't know, the mental gymnastics of it is super fun.
Mm-hmm. I think it's the 1% rule too. I mean, when you first start looking at deals, everything looks great and you don't know what to ask the brokers. But I think as you start to kind of progress in your career, right, in your experience level, it's kind of fun now to start underwriting deals or knowing a deal whether it's good or bad in 5 or 10 minutes. Now we know. Right. It's fun to talk to brokers and they're like, well, here's the list. And you can go back and say like, well, we know that the market that doesn't support it. Right. And they go, yeah, you're right. Actually, you're true. And so I think it's fun to see those wins to know that you're starting to get the lingo down. Right. And the way you process information is done at a much higher rate mm-hmm. than it was in the past. And it's just kind of fun to kind of see that and, you know, and talk through deals with Mike. Now we can talk through a deal in just a matter of minutes and knowing like, yeah, not a good deal. Here's our final offer, or there's no reason to make an offer because there's just no way this guy's serious, right? And that's okay too. But those are the fun ones to do and just, you know, enjoy the journey as you're walking through.
Yeah, that's super inspiring. I mean, just that process of getting up to speed with the lingo and being able to communicate with brokers and having confidence in analyzing deals as they come across your desk. And I think that's, you know, that's something that you can't really, really get until you actually dig in and do it and start, you know, as you mentioned, like maybe feeling like you made a fool of yourself from time to time. So, yeah.
That's okay. I mean, that's what we all do. Nobody starts out as a pro. And I guess just embrace the process and say like, hey, listen, I'm going to sound like a schmuck to this guy, but that's why you call brokers in markets you're not interested in, right? Call somebody in Dallas if you're not going to have this in Dallas. And that's okay, right? And talk through. You at least kind of get the idea of what they probe back at, what they're asking, how serious they're going to take you. And that helps you start to learn how to talk to a broker the correct way.
Yeah, for sure. So did you pitch this to your investors as like a certain hold period or a long-term hold?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think our business plan is, 5 to 7 year hold, depending. Obviously, you want to have flexibility with your investors. You don't want to say, hey, we're definitely going to sell it in 5 years, although we do have long-term financing. But the goal, I think, for us is to understand that we can weather a market cycle and we can determine value at that point and decide what's best for us and the investors, mm-hmm. And we'll see what comes. Right now, things are looking pretty good, but, we're only a couple months. And so having that flexibility is really good over the long term.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a 2018 building. What do you have planned in terms of upgrades or anything of that nature?
Nothing. It's got granite finishes, stainless steel appliances. I mean, it's high end already. And so we're just bringing rents up to market rate, doing some better advertising. And I think we're seeing lease rates renew right now at $225 above what they were last year. So we're seeing a nice little bump without really any CapEx cost at all, which is kind of the unicorn of deals, but we got lucky on this one.
Yeah, that's awesome. Cool. And what are you looking at, for the next several months? Are you looking to purchase more in the Tennessee area or where are you headed?
Yeah, we've already got a deal under contract and it's a little bit more of a fixer upper. So, we know that number one, the first one was a unicorn and it was a great property and very little CapEx, very little maintenance. We found another property that's great. We know the area now. We know what the values are. We know what the rents are. We know what the demand for housing is. And so we found this great deal that somebody came to us and said, here's a deal. This is what it needs. What do you guys think? And we started working through the whole deal. And there's certainly better upside. There's more risk, of course, but it's manageable risk. And we understand that now. And I think there's been a lot of work done to figure out how we're going to upgrade it and how we're going to make it actually fit the market. And so since we understand the market and know what people want in that market, we can figure out how to make it fit that market. And that's what we're doing now, working through a special financing deal. And hopefully we'll have it closed in the middle of June.
Awesome.
That's a great story though, because it goes to momentum, right? I mean, we grinded for 2 years. We got our first deal done, which took 4 months to close. And then about 3 weeks after we closed that first deal, the guy that helped us sponsor the Fannie Mae loan calls up and says, hey, I've got the seller who wants to sell off market deal. You guys want a partner? And it's like, yeah, hell yeah, right? I mean, those are the, so I think, people kind of look at this as like, it's not this like gradual, you do a couple deals a year through your career. It's like you grind and grind and grind. And then once you hit that first deal, you immediately build credibility with people. And then it's like that, it's that scale up rocket ship type of thing, right? And so I think what Mike and I feel great about is we know that market well, but we have a really good team in place too. And so we can take that asset and turn it around really quickly because we have a really solid team in that, even though Mike and I are a couple thousand miles away in Idaho, we still trust the folks on the ground to do it without us being there on a daily basis.
Yeah. Well, that's super awesome. I know people always often talk about the law of the first deal. And you guys made it to your first deal and now you're off to the races. So that's really exciting. I'd love to just give you guys a couple minutes to just give the listeners a way to get in touch with you and shine the spotlight on you and share anything else that you'd like to share.
Yeah, well, they can check our website out. It's elementalequityllc.com, or they can send us an email to Bernie or Mike at elementalequityllc.com. We're happy to help you answer any questions you have. Our site's kind of educational. We're trying to help out people who, like ourselves, are W-2 guys and gals who are working really hard but want to set up some type of alternate income stream for themselves, but not have to do the heavy lifting of finding deals themselves and managing the assets. We'll do that for them and allow them to kind of focus on their family and their career.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll make sure to have those in the show notes. Did you have anything to add to that, Mike?
No, it's exciting times and I look forward to talking to anyone who's interested.
Okay, well, we'll have to make sure to have you guys back on once you get that second deal under your belt and just see how things go on your journey as you continue on. So thank you so much and have a great day.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.